Blog Talk Radio.
Devil way down in the hole. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report. Today's date is July 27th, 2011. Beautiful, lovely Washington, D.C., planet Earth. Well, United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. Tonight we're going to do something a little bit different from my usual government, conservative, and Obama bashing. Tonight we're going to talk about, tonight we're going to talk a little bit more about conspiracy theories. Conspiracy theories, we all love a good conspiracy theory. Everyone enjoys hearing about a good conspiracy theory. And many people enjoy coming up with new ones. You can spend an incredible amount of time reading about theories and wondering if there is any truth to them. And so this list is the top 10 conspiracy theories. If you feel that I have left out your favorites or have proof that any of these are not just theory but fact, well, post a comment in the chat room or call in. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. And remember, if you have any disputes, hey, let's talk about it. Many conspiracy theories have been presented concerning September 11, 2001, the attacks on New York City and the Twin Towers and all of America. Many of them claiming that President George W. Bush and or individuals in his administration knew about the attacks beforehand and purposefully allowed them to occur because the attacks would generate public support for militarization, expansion of the police state, and other intrusive foreign and domestic policies by which they would benefit. I wonder, what do you think about that? Proponents point to the project for the New American Century, a conservative think tank that argues for increased American global leadership, whose former members include former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, Vice President Dick Cheney, and several other key Bush administration figures. A 1990 report from the group stated that some catastrophic and cataclysmic or catalyzing event, like perhaps a new Pearl Harbor, would be needed to budge public opinion in their favor. And that's one. What do you think about that? The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Number two, one of my personal favorites, and of course an all-star in the group, UFOs recovered at Roswell. Yeah. The most outlandish and often the most misunderstood conspiracy theory. The Roswell UFO incident involved the recovery of materials near Roswell, New Mexico in July 1947, which have since become the subject of intense speculation, rumor, questioning, and research. Now, there are widely divergent views on what actually happened, and passionate debate about what evidence can be believed. The United States military maintains that what was recovered was a top secret research balloon that crashed. But by the early 1990s, UFO researchers such as Friedman, William Moore, Carl Pollack, and a team of Kevin Randall and Don Schmidt, I don't know if you know who these folks are, but I do. And I'll give you more information into who they are just a little bit later. These folks claimed to have had a connection to the events at Roswell in 1947. Additionally, hundreds of documents were obtained via Freedom of Information Act. The requests were apparently leaked by insiders, such as the disputed Majestic, or quote, Majestic 12, end quote, documents. Their conclusions were that at least one alien craft had crashed in the Roswell vicinity, that aliens some possibly still alive were recovered, and that a massive cover-up of any knowledge of the incident was put in place. Here's what really happened, folks. I'm going to throw it out there for you. I'm going to let you know exactly what happened. The government tested weather balloons. They also put, at that point, state-of-the-art crash test dummies in these weather balloons. And when the weather balloon there were gauges inside the weather balloon and also attached to the crash test dummies to gauge how the human body would interact up in the atmosphere without the aid of oxygen and LOX bottles and that sort of thing. So the weather balloon crashes. The dummies are strewn all over the New Mexico place, the four or five or six dummies. One or two were seen to be picked up by the recovery team, and thus the alien life form deal was born. It's amazing and bizarre and weird and weird and bizarre. Have a caller on C. Robert Jones, Conservative Radio Report. Yeah, call it Sean. Okay, my caller must be simply listening in. I guess I will know when he is ready to speak up. Another one of my personal favorites is the John F. Kennedy assassination. The assassination of John F. Kennedy, the 35th president of the United States, took place on Friday, November 22nd, 1963. In Dallas, Texas, at exactly 12:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. Kennedy was fatally wounded by gunshots while riding with his wife, Jacqueline, in a presidential motorcade through Dealey Plaza. Now, the official investigation by the Warren Commission was conducted over a 10-month period. And its report was publicized in September of 1964. The commission concluded that the assassination was carried out solely by Lee Harvey Oswald, an employee of the Texas School Book Depository in Dealey Plaza. We all know this. We've all heard the stories. We can talk about it ad nauseum, and I certainly would like to if you would. Now, the number of conspiracy theories exist are astounding. Now, with regard to the assassination of President Kennedy, such theories began to be generated soon after his death. I mean, the guy wasn't even cold, and continue to be proposed to this very day. Many of these theories propose a criminal conspiracy involving parties such as the Federal Reserve, the Central Intelligence Agency, the KGB, the Mafia, even the FBI. Vice President Lyndon Johnson as well, Richard Nixon, Fidel Castro, George H.W. Bush, Cuban exile groups opposed to the Castro government and the military or government interests of the United States. The situation, it was all very crowded. All of these people apparently wanted to see, in some way or another, harm come to the 35th president of the United States. It's hard for most citizens to wrap their hands around just one person, one single demented individual killing the most powerful man in the world. But it happened before that point. Now, Lee Harvey Oswald was a Marine. Marines are prideful of our expertise with a rifle. Before leaving boot camp, Marines are certified riflemen. Every single Marine. Every single Marine is a basic rifleman. Because the Marine Corps averages less than 300,000 in times of peace, every Marine must be proficient as an infantryman, a rifleman. It doesn't matter whether he's in computers or administration or supply. Every single Marine is an expert rifleman, or at least pretty damn good. Oswald could have killed Kennedy blindfolded if he had wanted to. That's an exaggeration, but I think you get my point. So there's that theory right there. If you are interested, please call in. We'll talk about it. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. I'm going back to my caller. You're on.
Just me?
Yeah.
Oh, hi. This is Gunslinger, 1964. I was just listening in. I couldn't get the BTR player to work.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, if you have a comment, then that's fine. But if you'd like to listen in, I'll just put you on hold.
So, yeah, you can just keep my mic live here. I'll go ahead and mute on my end.
Will do. Thank you for listening in, Gunslinger. All right, so there we have it. That is conspiracy number 3. You got a lot of stuff going on here with conspiracy theories. Take a listen to this clip, and then let me know what you think about it.
Dark secrets, shocking revelations, and astonishing claims. Diana's death was no accident. Marilyn's suicide may have been murder. They were victims of a lethal conspiracy, just like John F. Kennedy. You'll also hear other conspiracies, some of them so balmy they'll make your head spin. Aliens have landed and living among us. Elvis is alive. And some of the most famous people in the world are not what they seem. They're not even human. Tonight, we examine the world's top 10 conspiracy theories, and we'll count down to reveal our number one. A strange and bizarre conspiracy, and yet...
Now, I just want to go ahead and point out, Elvis died 2 years ago. Working at the local mini mart in Pembroke Pines, Florida. I used to go there all the time to get my Slurpee. And I swear to God, Elvis was working there. But
we're
I hear
that in a new and terrible age, the age of conspiracy. We've lost confidence in all our normal sources of authority and truth. We don't trust our politicians. We don't listen to our religious leaders. We don't believe what we hear on the news. The truth may still be out there, but we're not getting it.
People simply don't trust authorities anymore. There may be good reasons for this. In many cases, authorities have told terrible porkies over the years.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
But this is now almost a tick, almost a reflex, that all governments lie, all politicians are corrupt, everything's bent, everything's fixed.
I have no hesitation in stating categorically that these allegations are wicked lies.
Everybody lies and everybody tells porkies. You can't believe anything.
These men and women are prepared to blow the lid on some of the world's greatest conspiracies. They've been laughed at, threatened, ridiculed, and persecuted. But what if they're right?
The reporter once asked George Bush Sr. on the anniversary of Kennedy's assassination, what do you think about a conspiracy? He chuckles and says, yeah, and Elvis is still alive, and there are UFOs.
Tonight, discover a different truth about some of the most shocking secrets of recent times.
People just want to wait a minute. You know, what we just saw with our own eyes is contradicted to what we've been told forever and ever.
And haven't you always wondered if there isn't something rather odd about some of our most prominent figures?
What they really are is reptiles masquerading as human beings.
In compiling our top 10, we've spoken to conspiracy theorists, conspiracy skeptics, and conspiracy superstars. And we've used internet search engines to measure the popularity of some of the world's greatest conspiracy theories by the number of related websites. Tonight, 10 of the world's biggest secrets, or should that be 10 of the world's craziest ideas? You decide. At number 10, with 10,700 dedicated websites, were the moon landings hoaxed?
10, 9, ignition sequence start.
Was this mankind's most impressive scientific achievement, or a giant con trick?
Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour.
I want to believe man has landed on the moon, but I don't like to be manipulated. I don't like to have information spun to me.
That's one small step for man.
Conspiracy theorists believe fear of failure led NASA to perpetrate one giant con on mankind.
A decision may well have been taken at some point. We can't risk it, but we must show it. If you can't make it, you fake it.
On July the 21st, 1969, as a worldwide audience of 600 million watched, these grainy black and white images were beamed back to Earth.
But they were really bad quality. You could just see two rather ghost-like figures leaping about or wandering about, and some sort of structure in the background, but very little else. There was no detail.
With the eyes of the world on them, the Americans couldn't risk anything going wrong.
There's no evidence to suggest this. It's highly speculative, but you'll see this picked up again and again on internet discussions of this topic. Basically, the whole thing was fake, shot on a set in slow motion or with, you know, people on wires to make the zero-G gravity effect work.
Would they have risked an astronaut throwing up in his helmet live on television? Would they have risked an astronaut dying in space and orbiting the Earth? No, I don't think they would.
3 weeks after the Apollo 11 crew returned to Earth, the first clear photographs, in color, were released to the public. They've since become some of the most famous images in the world. So what is wrong with these pictures?
Primarily, they're too good. They are brilliant photographs. They're accurately composed, beautifully exposed, correctly focused, no heads are cut off. They are brilliant photographs.
The astronauts were dressed head to foot in cumbersome spacesuits, wearing heavy gloves, giving them the manual dexterity of Mr. Blobby. How could they produce such perfect shots?
The astronauts actually trained for a long time taking photographs with the chest-mounted cameras, so they were fully versed with the use of that equipment. But also, there are a lot of photographs there that aren't clear, aren't in good focus.
And guess what? Turns out that NASA did rehearse the moon landing on a stage set somewhere in the desert. So are these astronauts walking on the moon? Or are they going through the motions on a man-made set just an hour and a half's drive from the fleshpots of Las Vegas?
One theory even holds that the astronauts, you know, amused themselves in between shots by hanging out in the casinos in Las Vegas. And one theorist claims that two astronauts got in a fight over a showgirl named Peachy Keen.
We've managed to track down Peachy Keen. No, of course we haven't. But if we did, even she might spot something odd about some of these pictures. If this is really Buzz Aldrin climbing onto the surface of the moon, why isn't he in shadow? The only available light from the sun is on the other side of the landing module.
He is in shadow at this point, but you see him illuminated as if from a light source close to the camera position. But we know they didn't carry additional light sources or flash guns or reflectors. They had no additional light. This was Armstrong photographing Aldrin. So we're told it's reflected light off the lunar surface. It can't be.
What do you think? Those who take NASA at face value say all these shadows could be produced by the sun reflecting off the moon's surface.
They are real, they are there, and they prove there is one source of light, which is the sun. You've got to take into consideration at the same time the topography, the diffuse reflections off the surface, specular reflections from objects such as the lunar module as well. So shadows do exist on the surface of the moon, but they prove there is one source of light.
But even if the shadows can be explained, why, in an atmosphere without air, does the stars and stripes appear to flutter in the wind? Did some dopey stagehand leave a door open and allow a gust of desert wind to blow through the studio where these images were faked?
I've seen those shots, and it is very intriguing. You know, but it's hard to tell. It's right after the flag is planted, and it's a springy, sort of starchy flag, so it'll stand out straight. And it almost looks as if it's just a little bit of recoil from the planting of the flag. Who knows, though?
Eagle Houston, after yaw around angle, S-band pitch, minus 900, yaw, plus 1.
Of course, NASA has rebutted each and every charge that the moon landings were hoaxed and insists the very idea is ludicrous. But then they would, wouldn't they?
It doesn't really matter what NASA say, or what explanation they come up with, or how many scientists they parade to say, this isn't true, this isn't true. Once people have decided there's a conspiracy involved here, then most people who, once having made that decision, will stick to it.
But if we can be deceived about something that happened thousands of miles from Earth, how much harder might it be to cover up something much closer to home? Particularly when it involves the curious death of one of the most famous women in the world.
When you have somebody young and beautiful, it's really hard for the public to accept this. In the case of Marilyn Monroe, there are some mysteries, and they haven't been cleared up, and perhaps never will be.
Why do we all love a good conspiracy theory? Is it because it's far more exciting and satisfying than the boring old truth? Who wants to believe the official version of some of the most challenging events and experiences in our lives?
The word conspiracy comes from the Latin and actually means literally breathing together. The idea of conspirators sitting together, probably late at night, conspiring, even it's a sibilant word, conspiring, breathing together to work up some usually criminal deed.
She was loved by millions and lusted after by movie stars, mobsters, even presidents. At number 9, did Marilyn Monroe commit suicide, or was she murdered?
Over to Tokyo, where the land of the rising sun bows to a twinkling star. It's Marilyn Monroe and her husband, Joe DiMaggio, on their honeymoon.
So, that clip was very interesting, and I played it for a reason. I want to give you an idea of what we're dealing with here. From a long time ago, I mean, the moon landing being a hoax. Conspiracies abound. And isn't it interesting that we learn what the word conspiracy means? To breathe together. So, in essence, we're all committing conspiracies. Me and Karen and Gunslinger and Richard and Tesla, we're breathing together and we are creating, as a result, a conspiracy. So, global warming. Now we're going to move forward now because I enjoyed that clip and I hope that you did too. Because tonight we're talking about conspiracies. We're talking about the New World Order. Tonight and tomorrow night, this is what we'll be talking about. The New World Order will be tomorrow, and we'll talk about the shadowy figures that control the world monetary system, political systems, everything controlled by just a few people. But that's for tomorrow. Let's continue on right now, talking about conspiracies, hoaxes, frauds. Are they? Let's talk about it. The suggestion of a conspiracy to promote the theory of global warming, well, that was put forward in 1990 in a documentary called the Greenhouse Conspiracy. And it started in the United Kingdom on 12 August 1990 as part of the Equinox series, which asserted that scientists critical of global warming, of the global warming theory were denied funding. A comet on the moon. All right, hold on a minute. All right, Gunslinger has a comment on the moon. Gunslinger, are you there?
Yeah, I mean, I did, before you change to the next one, if there's an interesting thought that a lot of people don't think about when they think about the moon landing. Mm-hmm. Of course, those clips are right, obviously. Okay, a couple of things real quick is, you know, that thing had an 1,800-pound thrust rocket engine when it was coming down, supposedly landing on the moon. Now, the moon is made out of, they claim, fine dust, a lot of dust, and up there billions of years of what they claim. Okay? Where's all the dust cloud at? Even though it has one-third less gravity on the moon, where's all this dust cloud that an 1,800-pound thrust rocket engine would throw up? Second point real quick is that you've probably seen these that little four-wheel drive, little lunar dune buggy, I guess if you want to call it, okay? And if anybody knows about four-wheel drives and been out four-wheeling and everything, you know what a rooster tail is, that the wheels kick up when you're going through mud, sand, water, whatever. If you notice real close, the left back one on this little moon dune buggy thing, it had a little rooster tail, but it would immediately fall back to the ground. What does that prove to you? 100% gravity. If it was one-third less gravity, there would be a huge dust cloud behind that thing just floating in the air. I didn't see any. Good.
Wow. You know what? Those are great points. And I didn't think of those. I knew that there's an explanation for the fluttering of the, or the perceived fluttering of the flag, that being that the flag was being held in rigid place by some wires. And that's why it appeared that it was fluttering, but it was actually kind of moving back and forth on this little axis it had there. But I mean, those are great points, Gunslinger. What about?
Oh well, there's also some other things. You know, there's what you call the Van Allen radiation belts. Okay, those are thousands of miles out between here and the moon. Okay, now the space shuttle can go up there. The space station up there, it can float around up there because it's not within those Van Allen radiation belts. These things are thousands of miles thick, intense solar radiation. Now, if you pay close attention to this little spaceship that they supposedly went to the moon in, the thing has no protection against radiation. It's claimed, or some other people has claimed, that it would take up to 12 feet thick of lead to protect the occupants inside from that intense radiation. Now, you're telling me they went to the moon through this, stayed, came back through it, and come out of that little splashdown capsule just perfectly healthy, no radiation burns, no radiation sickness, no nothing. All right. Go ahead.
Interesting. I wonder if anyone else feels the same way. So Gunslinger, is it safe to suggest that you believe that the landing was indeed a hoax?
I think it was a pretty good hoax, because, you know, they could go up there and orbit around the Earth, no problem. I'm sure they've done that. Okay, I really think that they, because I've seen the space shuttle fly over a couple times, okay? You can see
it
from horizon to horizon. So, yeah, they can go around the Earth. But look at the other things that they had to do while they was up on the moon. Now, at night, it gets sub-zero freezing cold up there. During the day, the temperature may exceed 250 degrees or better, okay? The camera was mounted on the outside of their space suits, supposedly. Well, 1969, all they had was what? Bell and Howell back then, the old photography, black and white film. Okay, they didn't have high-speed digital cameras and all this good stuff that we got today, okay? So how did the film survive that extreme cold and then the next day the extreme hot? The thing would either freeze and crumble or it would melt in the camera itself as soon as the lens opened on that camera. How did they do that?
I wonder, Gunslinger, if NASA has some explanation for the points that you just brought up. I know that this has been a sore spot with NASA for many, many years, and they've often produced the scientific explanations for questions like the ones that you presented here tonight. Would any of their explanations satisfy you at all?
Knowing that, well, you know what NASA also stands for, right? It stands for never a straight answer, okay? All right. Now, you know, today we've got that Hubble Space Telescope floating around up there, that multi-billion dollar thing by now, but all the maintenance and everything they've done on it. This thing can see billions of light years into the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, NASA refuses to do a little keystrokes on a computer, turn that baby around, and take a picture of the moon. Don't you think if it can see billions of years into the universe, you know, don't you think it might take a picture of the surface of the moon and prove it once and for all, since they're so damn proud of we went to the moon and all this stuff? Well, prove it. Why has it been 40 years, okay, since we haven't even went back? Are they hiding something else? Maybe moon bases? Maybe they've already been there with Area 51 technology. Who knows? I mean.
Okay. Go ahead. All right. You know, wait a minute. Let me just ask this. Have they refused to do so? Have they given an explanation for why they won't? Or, I mean, what's going on with that? Has anybody asked them to take a picture of the moon? Or is this just your, your request?
A few years ago, I have heard that somebody, I can't think of who it was, maybe Carl Sagan might have asked him. Yeah, that kind of rings a bell. But I believe they were asked, and they refused. They either refused or say, well, the optics on it, they'd be so expensive to turn it around, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. They're typical BS, you know, responses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think the question has been asked, and I don't know why it hasn't been asked repeatedly, you know.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, hold on, Gunslinger. I'm going to go ahead and finish off the top 10 here, and then if you'd like to comment on anything, I'll just put you on hold here, and you just connect with me via the private chat, and then I'll put you back on, and then you can expound on anything I have anything I'm talking about here within the top 10, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's fine. I've got plenty. Go ahead.
All right. Hold on.
All right.
Here we go. The next one. Oh, yes, that's right. William Gray, PhD. A pioneer in the science of hurricane forecasting, has made a list of the 15 reasons for global warming hysteria. The list includes the need to come up with an enemy after the end of the Cold War, and the desire among scientists, government leaders, and environmentalists to find a political cause that would enable them to organize, propagandize, and force conformity and exercise political influence. Hey, Annie, good to see you in the room. Big world government could best lead and control us to a better world if there's a boogeyman such as global warming, i.e., interdependence on fossil fuels. This whole new thing with the light bulbs, control and more control to get us to change our ways and live a greener, more earth-friendly lifestyle. So in order to get us to move in that direction, perhaps this whole global warming thing is just a big hoax. Perhaps. Al Gore, then the Vice President of the United States, with federal funding, according to him, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, stopped giving research grants because they were afraid that the research grants would expose the idea that there's no such thing as global warming. Next, Princess Diana was murdered by the royal family. In 1997, Princess Diana, Princess of Wales, and Dodi Fayed, son of Mohammed Fayed, owner of the Ritz Hotel and Harrods, were killed in a car accident while trying to get away from press photographers in Paris. The scandal surrounding their relationship, Dodi, who was a Muslim, and Diana was the mother of the future head of the Church of England. The thought that those two would get together has led many people to speculate that they were actually killed in order to prevent further scandal to the throne of England. Polls suggest that around a quarter of the UK public and the majority of people in some Arab countries believe that there was a plot to murder Diana. Motivations which have been advanced for such a conspiracy include suggestions that Diana intended to marry Dodi Fayed and that she intended to convert to Islam and that she was pregnant and that she was going to visit the Holy Land. Organizations which conspiracy theorists suggest are responsible for her death have included the French intelligence, the British royal family, the press, the British Intelligence Service, MI5 or MI6, the CIA, of course, the Mossad, the Freemasons, or the IRA. All of these people have been linked to the suspected assassination of Princess Diana. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Jewish world dominance. We've all heard it. We've all grown up with it. The Jews are responsible for every bad thing that the world has ever experienced. Everything, including the election of Barack Hussein Obama. This theory of Jewish world domination in recent history extends mainly from the booklet The Protocols of the Elders of Zion. That's right, which are widely considered to be the beginning of contemporary conspiracy theory literature, if you insist. The protocols were considered by some to be an anti-Jewish literary forgery that purports to describe a Jewish plot to achieve world domination. Numerous independent investigations have repeatedly proven it to be plagiarism and a hoax, yet numerous independent investigations have shown that it is a factual document. So where are we? The text was popularized by those opposed to Russian revolutionary movements, and was disseminated further after the revolution of 1905, becoming known worldwide after the 1917 October Revolution. It was widely circulated in the West in 1920, and therefore the Great Depression. Yeah, I mean, well, thereafter the Great Depression and the rise of Nazism, they were all important developments in the history of the protocols. And we've touched on the Apollo moon landing hoax. Both Gunslinger and I spoke to that. But we'll go ahead and touch on it again and wrap it up. The Apollo moon landing hoax comes in at number 7. The Apollo moon landing hoax accusers or accusations are claims that some or all elements of the Apollo moon landing were faked by NASA and possibly members of other involved organizations. Of course, there are always those other shadowy involved nations. Southern Sense writes in the chat room, aren't all the true Christians Jewish at heart? Was not Christ Jewish? Indeed, Southern, indeed. Yeah, I can't wait for Tesla to get back too. He is back. He's just not back. If that makes any sense. So come on back, Tesla. Then you'll truly be back. But you're back. The moon hoax proponents devote a substantial portion of their efforts to examining NASA photos. They point to various issues with photographs and films purportedly taken on the moon. Experts in photography, even those unrelated to NASA, respond that the anomalies, while sometimes counterintuitive, are in fact precisely what one would expect from a real moon landing, and contrary to what would occur with manipulated or studio imagery. A hoax proponents also state that the whistleblowers may have deliberately manipulated the NASA photos in hopes of exposing NASA. So where do we stand on this? Because one of the most popular conspiracies involves the NASA moon landings as being purported to be just one big giant movie production. And not a very good one. One of my favorites here, also coming in at number 8, is Pearl Harbor. Now, I have studied this personally over and over and over again. Because the Pearl Harbor was allowed to happen, conspiracy theories is one of that I have that's near and dear to my heart. So I have really taken a lot of time to just study, and I wrote down a couple of notes earlier today. This theory states that President Roosevelt provoked the attack, knew about it in advance, and covered up his failure to warn the Hawaiian commanders. FDR needed the attack to sucker Hitler into declaring war, since the public and Congress were overwhelmingly against entering the war in Europe. So it was reported to be a backdoor war, or a backdoor to war. Theorists believe that the U.S. was warned by at least the governments of Britain, Netherlands, Australia, Peru, Korea, and the Soviet Union that a surprise attack on Pearl Harbor was coming. All important Japanese codes were broken. FDR and Marshall and others knew the attack was coming, allowed it, and covered up their knowledge. Anybody agree with that? Because here's my thing on this. America, the United States of America, now and especially then, we're an arrogant nation. We're a very cocky nation. It's the truth. We are. And somehow we just couldn't believe that the Japanese would attack us on our own soil, and indeed that they could. Remember, the Japanese were more than 3,000 miles away from Hawaii. There was no way, according to Americans, the American leadership at that time, for the Japanese to get that far. Even though we managed to get as far as close to Japan as 400 miles when the Doolittle raid occurred. And we would have gotten closer if the commanders at the time hadn't thought they'd been spotted and discovered. No, we were simply an arrogant nation thinking that we could not be touched on our own soil. And indeed, there were warnings. There were warning signs all over the place. But when you're just as cocky and arrogant, and some of you know this in your own lives, when you're overly confident, that's when mistakes happen. And we refuse to see what's right before our eyes. A lot of times, when we're sure, when we believe that we're sure, no amount of persuasion is going to change that. And that's exactly what happened during Pearl Harbor. We did not believe that they were going to attack, or that, in fact, they could. Now, I'm going to bring Gunslinger back in here because he'd like to make a comment on this subject, and I'd love to hear what he has to say. Gun.
Yeah, on Pearl Harbor, very interesting subject. I'll get right to the point. Of course, you're right. The United States was dying to get into World War II. It was already going over, or ongoing in Germany and Europe and all them places over there. So they had to make an excuse to get the United States to convince Congress to get into this war. Now think about it for a minute. You have a super fleet like the United States Navy. Now the president at the time ordered this entire Pacific fleet into Pearl Harbor. Now if you know anything about Pearl Harbor, I'm sure you've seen the pictures. It's a one-way in, one-way out canyon. Remember the old cowboys and Indians? It's a canyon. Yeah. Those ships were set there just like shooting ducks in a pond. Okay? Now, why would somebody do that, and all the military, the naval leaders, would say, well, yeah, we'll go ahead and put our entire Pacific fleet into one little canyon, and we're on the verge of war? Is that a very smart decision?
No, it's not. But Gunslinger, I have to state that, you know, I believe that at the time, the powers that be controlling the United States military, the government officials, did not believe that Japan could get close enough to attack us.
Well, yeah, that may be. But we still had radar. They were picked up on radar, the Japanese fleet. So some communication was intercepted point during this time, okay? Because if you've seen the World War II footage, those bombers knew exactly, or them kamikaze pilots or whatever you want to call them, they knew exactly what ship to hit. I mean, it's just like, it's too perfect. You can see it even in the old footage, the film footage. Mm-hmm. They went in there with precision. Bombed, dropped, and got the hell out if they could, or if they just crashed right into it like a kamikaze pilot would.
Yeah.
It's just too perfect. I mean, for 1940, come on. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. Now, we also have David David Graham, the author of the novel Stay Mad. David, do you have anything to add here?
Yes, not a novel, but thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do apologize.
Not at all.
I don't know where to go
with that. Do you leave no room for the possibility that the people was, you know, our guys were just stupid?
I don't leave room for stupidity. I do leave room for arrogance, which is splitting hairs of sorts.
Yeah,
I mean, this the semantics. I think that, you know, we have always been the kind of country that says that, you know, this this country wouldn't dare attack us on our own soil. There's never been an attack on our own soil. Of course, there was the 1814, I think it was 1814, if my memory serves me correct, where the British were able to attack Washington and burn the White House and a whole lot of other things. But that was it. That was it. That a country like Japan could never attack us on our own soil. And indeed, they would never have the capability. They wouldn't dare. The arrogance of the United States of America has caused us trouble for a lot throughout our history. And this is one of those times where we felt, Americans felt that, you know, these little, tiny little guys who don't appear to be very bright, they make these cute little toys, you know, these little wind-up toys, and and all the gadgets that they made, okay, they're good for that sort of thing. And, you know, but as far as attacking, they make a nice radio, but as far as attacking the United States of America, not going to happen. Well, once again, a classic American underestimation of another country and another people.
Well, too, look at the footprint of their country compared to the footprint of you know, America. I mean, who would do that?
Yeah, that's true. So that is my explanation, according to my research, that America, we were simply, you know, arrogant enough to believe that we could not be attacked by Japan, that they were too far away, that there was no way they could get to us without us knowing well in advance. And in fact, it actually turned out to be true. It's simply that a lot of people, Admiral King to be one of them at the time, who was later relieved and sent packing, Ernest King, didn't want to believe it, because there were signs. There were signs all over the place. But the arrogance of the generals, the admirals, and even people in the FDR's administration simply did not or refuse to believe that Japan would attack us. Because all indications, David and Gunslinger, were that Japan was attempting to deal with us diplomatically. It was a head fake. That's what it really was. All right. Got some feedback here, so I'm going to put you guys on hold for just a minute, okay? Okay. Well, I didn't have to do that, so. All right, so you guys are still here. Let's move on with the next one. The Philadelphia Experiment. The Philadelphia Experiment was an alleged naval military experiment at the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Now, sometime around October 28, 1943, what occurred was a naval destroyer escort, the USS Eldridge, was to be rendered invisible to human observers for a brief period of time. It's also referred to as Project Rainbow. The story is widely regarded as a hoax. The U.S. Navy has stated that the experiment never occurred, and furthermore, details of the story contradict stated facts about the Eldridge. It was nonetheless caused a significant ripple effect in many conspiracy theory circles. The elements of the Philadelphia experiment are featured in many other government conspiracy theories. Let me talk about it. According to some accounts, the experiment was conducted by Dr. Franklin Delano. I'm thinking about Roosevelt. By a Dr. Franklin Reno or Franklin Reinhardt, as a military application of a unified field theory. The theory briefly postulates that interrelated nature of forces that comprise electromagnetic radiation and gravity. Through a special application of the theory, it was thought possible with I can't help but laugh with specialized equipment and significant energy, one could bend light around an object in such a way as to render it essentially invisible to observers. The Navy considered this application of the theory to be of obvious military value, especially as the United States was engaged in World War II at the time. Now, both approved and sponsored the experiment, the Navy and the United States government. A Navy destroyer escort, the USS Eldridge, was fitted with the required equipment at the Naval Yard in Philadelphia. Now, this is a gem because it is so far-fetched and bizarre that it's far-fetched and bizarre. And Gunslinger, you're on. Go ahead. Talk about it.
Okay, that is a very, very interesting one, no doubt. Probably one of the top ones, I would say. The Philadelphia experiment, they will, like you said, they will deny that it ever occurred. Now, what they was trying to do here, you know, that our aircraft was getting shot out of the sky during World War II because of them Jap Zeros and all that good stuff, okay? They wanted to make the aircraft invisible to radar. Now, what they did is they based this technology on Nikola Tesla's findings in the early 1900s, okay? When Tesla's, when the government seized Tesla's work, you think they put it on a dusty warehouse shelf and just forgot about it? No. This is one of their experiments using Tesla's technology to render a aircraft, or a ship for that matter, invisible to enemy radar. Now, what they did is they powered it up, and, oh yeah, the ship actually disappeared from radar. Yeah, but okay. It also disappeared from sight, too. Go ahead.
Okay, so you believe this one, Gunslinger, is that correct?
Based upon Tesla's technology, yes, but they will ever deny it. But they remember that the USS Eldridge had a skeleton crew aboard. When the crew, or when the thing, or when they tried to shut it off, or they did shut it off, the ship reappeared in a grayish, bluish haze, greenish, or whatever they said. Okay, but the crew members, and you've probably seen the movie, they were actually embedded into the bulkheads of the ship. Now,
I did hear that, but I thought that was in a movie or something.
Well, they claimed that a couple of people that actually was able to come forward that was actually there, most of the crew members were labeled as nutcases, and they put them in a sane asylum because, hey, you're crazy, government propaganda. Mm-hmm. But it's really not that simple, or it's not that hard to believe, because all you got to do is go and look up molecular disassociation. And that's what kind of Tesla was working on at the time, because remember, Tesla actually made a quote-unquote death ray. Put two of them together.
All right, David, do you have anything to add to that one?
No, I hadn't heard that one. Now, when you say embedded into the hull, did they come out alive?
They were only alive for a few minutes, obviously, but they claimed that a few, not all of them now, just a few of the crew members, when they shut this thing off and the ship reappeared, their bodies were actually embedded into the bulkheads of the ship. Now, I wasn't there, but based upon technology and what his advanced research was, and they were using that technology, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Go ahead.
What happened to the ship?
Go ahead.
What happened to the ship? Where is it?
I believe, if the way the story goes, the USS Eldridge was finally scrapped at the end of the war.
Okay.
I
have to be. I had heard that more than once. But you know how these conspiracy theories tend to, have a lot of legs. I indeed had heard that. We're going to take a short break, then we'll come back, and then we'll talk about some New World Order stuff, some of my favorite stuff.
Yeah.
We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes.
I got to tell you, with the high cost of gas and just about everything else, we're all feeling pinched.
And now I learned that Barack Obama supports a huge new tax on my guns and ammo.
Then he voted to ban virtually all deer hunting ammunition.
Where is this guy from?
He's probably never been hunting a day in his life. But it's not just new taxes that Barack Obama wants. If you can believe it, he also supports a ban on the shotguns and rifles most of us use for hunting. No politician is going to take away my guns and ammo.
You don't have to be bitter to know Barack Obama isn't the kind of change we need.
On November 4th, defend freedom. Defeat Obama. Get the facts at gunbanobama.com.
Lights, camera, action. You've been enjoying yourself. But now, it's time to make them love you again. You're cool, calm, collected. You've always gotten what you wanted. But was it ever what we wanted? We need jobs. We need leadership. Yet you do nothing as we pile up debts we can't afford. It's like you don't even get it.
And I'm one of your middle-class Americans. And quite frankly, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted of defending you, defending your administration, defending the mantle of change that I voted for.
We hope. And you hope.
My hope is.
But hope isn't hiring.
I remember America. Sure, you can still find it on a map, but nobody older than 20 thinks this is America. Even if coordinates are the same, we've lost our compass. You don't have a direction without reference, the true north. For America, it was liberty. When we lost the love of liberty, our understanding of liberty, it was just a matter of time before the rest of it was lost. Some think it started when the auto companies were nationalized, or the police state to control the internet. Or when certain companies couldn't fail because their relationship with politicians made them too big to fail, and the rest of us, without political influence, were too small to succeed. Sure, that all happened pretty quickly, over just a couple of years, but liberty had been gradually devolving for decades. Some of the more astute, like Ayn Rand, saw it about 50 years before others. She warned us, but people didn't believe it could happen here until it did. Laws had been used to loot productive individuals and businesses, but in the new millennium, under Bush and Obama, graft, corruption, and crony capitalism were no longer hidden behind closed doors. The looters and their laws came out of hiding like rabid animals that were no longer afraid of humans. It was brought into the spotlight, and it was celebrated as enlightened economic policy. Ayn Rand asked the question, Atlas shrugged, that the rest of us were asking 60 years later, which failing financial institution will the administration pluck from the flames of crisis? Which will it let roast? Which market or investment technique will the regulators bless? And which, in a capricious change of rules, will it condemn or outlaw? As John Galt said in his radio address,
you decided you had a right to your wages, but we had no right to our profits. You called it selfish and cruel that men should trade value for value, but you've now established an unselfish society where they trade extortion for extortion.
People who had never produced or managed anything tried to manage every aspect of our lives, and they brought production to a standstill. And eventually, they decided to micromanage the food supply in the name of fairness, safety. And we all know what happened then. Fiction can be a powerful influence, for good or bad. It's too bad more people didn't read Atlas Shrugged. They might have realized where this was heading.
All right, we're back with the Conservative Report. Your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. All right, let's get right back down into it. Now we're going to go ahead and switch directions here from conspiracy theories such as hoaxes and possible hoaxes to the New World Order and some of the players involved, because now we're getting, with this segment, we're getting closer into things that are happening today, things that we can actually see and read about and touch and feel. I mean, because there's so much being brought out as a result of this current administration, and even with my guy, George Bush, and his administration. with regard to the new world order. International bankers, top globalists, heads of the new world order. We're going to talk about those heads right now. And we're going to talk about them in order of importance. Let me go ahead and ask my callers here. I'll start with you, Gunslinger. What do you know about the new world order? What do you have to say about it?
Well, the new world order, I like to refer to them as a new world odor because they really smell. Okay, one thing. It goes from the top of the ruling elite. They're mostly in this new world order, but it also goes all the way down in branches to all levels of government because mm-hmm. they're all trying to get this one world global dictatorship. I mean, if you get a ticket on the street, you have to go to The Hague down there to fight it. Okay, this is what they mm-hmm. want. This is what the ruling elite, they just want to be up there on top of the king of the hill up here, and they want to rule over everybody. You know, and that's been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's nothing new. Take, for example, Bohemian Grove out in California. This is a elite resort for heads of state, ambassadors, presidents. Okay, Clinton was out there. Bush attended it. Now, these people are supposed to be Christian men that are supposed to be running this country, but yet they go out there and worship human sacrifices. They go out there and worship Moloch, a stone owl with horns. That doesn't sound very Christian to me, does it?
No, not at all. Let me go ahead and respond to my good friend Richard Martin here in the chat room. Richard writes, how is all this even relevant to the crisis we face today? If we talk about the real issues, we're called conspiracy theorists. Yet, if we talk about conspiracy theories, we talk about moon landings. So when do we talk about reality? Well, Richard, we start talking about reality right here and right now. And this show, today's show, is designed to kind of break things up a little bit because we're always talking about, always, what's going on with the current administration, what's going on with the debt crisis, what's going on with political events, current events, things that happen, you know, today. Because really what this show is all about is current events. What has happened earlier in the day, and we talk about it here on this show tonight. But I thought I'd kind of break things up a little bit and, you know, have a little bit of fun with the topics tonight just to kind of break the cycle of always being so serious and talking about current events just a little bit. But when we start talking about international bankers, globalists, heads of the New World Order, we've heard this word New World Order mentioned numerous times by political figures, not just here in the United States, but across the globe. So now we're going to be move from moon landings and such things into what is going on here. We've heard Vladimir Putin use the word New World Order. We've heard George Herbert Walker Bush use it. We've heard George Bush, the second president, use it. We've heard Barack Obama use it. We've heard numerous heads of state talk and discuss what they hope will soon be the new world order. So now we're getting back to reality, Richard. Okay. David, any thoughts before we get into it?
No, I think that was well said, what you just responded. It was a great question, you know, and I think that was well stated. I do have some, you know, I do have some thoughts, but I'm gonna keep my powder dry for now, if you don't mind. So go ahead and fire away.
No problem. The first, in order of importance, the folks who are responsible, or so it has been alleged, of this fashioning of the new world order, and they'll be listed here in order of importance: the Rothschild family, the Warburg family, the Schiff family, the Oppenheimer family, the Royal Family of England, Sachs, Coburg, Goth family, the Rockefeller family, the Morgan family, the Harriman family, and of course the Carnegie family. Why they're all families, I can't tell you. Or can't they be just like one dude, but or two, or just two really short guys? I don't know.
No, they have like family wealth.
Got it. Passed down.
So it's not like
a mafia family, right? It's just like.
No. Right. Exactly. But it's an empire family, and
all right.
You have like the House of Saud, and in Saudi Arabia, they have trillions.
Let's get into it then. The Rothschild family is by far the most influential, holding approximately half of all the world's wealth. Now that's reality, and that's a fact. That family is directly responsible for founding most of the other families, or helping them get on their feet. The Rothschild philosophy, law is force in disguise. Now that makes sense to me. Right lies in force. Might makes right. The right to rule lies in force. Who can dispute that?
No,
I don't think so. I mean, it makes perfect sense. And this is the philosophy of the Rothschild family. Political freedom is an idea, not a fact. In order to usurp political power, all that is necessary is to preach liberalism, and the electorates will give up more and more power to the conspirators. Any thoughts on that? Doesn't that make sense? Do we not see this happening today with our current political system, with George Soros backing President Obama, and a myriad of liberal organizations and causes? So that's what we're talking about here, right? With this, money is all powerful. Governments are insignificant compared to money. Since governments control the money, that control must be removed from governments and put in the hands of the conspirators. Is that not what we're seeing here with the debt crisis? With the Obama administration asking more and more, or demanding more and more money from corporate jet owners, the wealthy, asking them to contribute more in what the Obama administration considers to be just doing what's fair. Never mind that 51% of the American public do not pay taxes. But apparently, according to this administration, it's fair for the top 2% of the wealth producers to fork over even more of their jack just to make things fair for those who don't do anything. So the Rothschild philosophy holds to this very day. And number four, any and all means to achieve the goal of world domination by the conspirators is justified. Now, I want you to understand while I'm reading off this list that the Rothschild family is real. This is not a conspiracy or a made up family or some family in the shadows, not Illuminati esque. This is a real, very real family, real people, and this list was compiled by this family. These are real people here today, not just hoax, not the stuff we were talking about earlier. Now, number five, the size, scope, and power of the conspirators' resources must remain hidden. Interesting. Number six, alcohol, drugs, and moral corruption shall be used to weaken the will of the people. We see that happening. Do we not?
Mm-hmm.
Number seven, wars should be instigated and orchestrated so that both sides would be in their debt. In other words, the conspirators would gain profit and power no matter who won the wars. Interesting. We can apply that to what's going on here in modern day. Number eight, propaganda and control of information should be used to influence opinion. Do we not see that happening here with the drive-by media, as Rush Limbaugh calls it, with the state-run media, as Rush Limbaugh calls it, with the media firmly in the pocket of the liberals who are now in power, from President Barack Obama all the way down to the lowest, looniest congressman? We see that happening right here and now. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and read it for you once again. Propaganda and control of information should be used to influence opinion. That's exactly what we're seeing with the mainstream media right now. The only standard bearer we have, the only ray of light in the sea of darkness we have is Fox News. I mean, really, they're the only ones telling it like it is and exposing a lot of pertinent information to those of us who are deeply concerned about what's happening to this country. Number nine, pre-planned and artificially manipulated financial panics and depression should be used to tame the people, and weaken governments so as to ultimately form a one-world government with the conspirators as the rulers. Huh? David?
Yes, sir.
You want to touch on that briefly before I wrap up the rest?
excuse me. One way you were mentioning that phrase, I think you read it twice, where money is used to nudge and influence the people. And I can see it, and you know, you can hear them say it every time they say a word like you know, Obama, or somebody gets behind a microphone, or Harry Reid or whatever. The American people don't want this; they want that. That, you know, I call it a steering phrase.
Yeah.
And that's how they're nudging. That's how they're influencing. Those are phrases that don't reflect what people want. It's what they want us to want.
Yeah,
but let me just if you don't mind, I'd like to just do a little passage from my book based on what you were talking about with the Rothschilds and Rockefellers and stuff.
Sure.
It's by some research from Daniel Estillin, mm-hmm. who has done probably the most extensive research on the Bilderberg Group, and he writes in an article that I have in my book is I can trace these people back. Trace who these people are today back to the Venetian black nobility. We often hear about the influences of Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, but these people are merely your typical lackeys when you actually look at it. They are the bottom of the totem pole. If you're looking for powerful people, you can talk about the House of Braganza, or you can talk about the House of Orange and the House of Habsburg. These people have unimaginable wealth. You measure it not in billions, but in trillions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So, you didn't even know about those guys. You know
I
mean?
Did not. I did not. You know, Richard really did touch on something earlier in the conversation when I read what he posted in the room. How does what we're talking about here tonight speak to what's going on in the world right now? I'm paraphrasing. And reality. Think about this, my man, Richard. This is for you right now. Pre-planning and artificially manipulated financial panics and depression should be used to tame the people. So when the President of the United States refuses to compromise with Republicans with regard to taming our monetary system, cutting back on spending so that our children, not just our grandchildren, because we're not we're not at the point where our grandchildren are. We've gotten a little bit closer to the mark now. We're talking about our children's futures now, not just our grandchildren. Will be punished, you know, if we don't stop this massive amount of spending. But the President of the United States wants to spend some more. And he is causing a panic by suggesting that if the debt ceiling isn't raised, that there will be Armageddon, his actual words, and that Social Security checks may not go out, that there will be worldwide panic. Now, what the Rothschilds' plan is and what they've written here occurred years ago. This is all stuff that's been in the public area for many, many years. And you see, it's as if Barack Obama and this current administration has this, what I have right here, on their desk, and they're going by it through their playbook. Now, the Rothschild formula for the New World Order: war is the ultimate discipline to any government survival. From war becomes primary. Everything else is secondary. Survival from war becomes primary. Everything else is secondary. All that is necessary to ensure government indebtedness to the international bankers is war, or the threat of war. This is according to the Rothschilds' playbook. To create such a situation is necessary to pit two countries, or segments of one country, of equal force against one another, or to create them, the two opposing countries, or segments of one country, if they do not already exist, pit one side against the other, and finance both sides, so that the bankers win, no matter which side actually wins. Is this crazy?
What a racket.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, it all sounds really bizarre and crazy. But it's all happening right here and right now. I mean, really, when you think about what we've talked about, aside from the obvious theories like Marilyn Monroe, Kennedy, all of that, now we're getting into the meat of the matter of what's actually happening.
Well, think about it like this, guys. Speaking of the ruling elite, we all know what a multi-level chess game is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The players are these ruling elite families, and the chess pieces are the rest of the world. They plot countries against each other to other countries, including the United States now. It's all in the one big pie here.
Yeah.
And they bet who's going to come out, who's going to gain this country, who's going to lose. And they've done this throughout history. I mean, this is nothing recent. So what, does the Rothschilds go back to the 15th century or something like that?
That's right.
A few years ago, you're right. And I read a few years ago that the Rothschilds' worth at that time was like $500 trillion.
That's right.
Can anybody imagine holding that kind of money? And when you hold that kind of money, you'll never be able to spend it in a thousand lifetimes, okay? Because it's always incurring, it's always great gaining, it's always, you know, with all their investments and all this good stuff. So what is next? Power, control.
You're absolutely right, Gunslinger. We've got to break it off here. We have less than a minute left to go. But hey, come back tomorrow because we're going to wrap this whole thing up, and then we're going to get back to the real world, some current events, what's going on in the current events with the debt ceiling and all that. But tomorrow we're going to wrap up the New World Order, and we're going to get deep into it, the current events, George Soros, and what's happening in the world of the New World Order. I want to thank all my listeners for being here, everybody for coming in, Beach Bomb, Karen, Richard, Tesla, GGT, all of my guests, Antoinette, Gunslinger, oh, and of course my good friend David. Thank y'all for being here, and we'll get back tomorrow. Sorry we got to cut it off because it's a great topic. Everybody have a great night, and thank you for being here.
Thanks,
and I'll see you tomorrow.
High above the chimney top, that's where